The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
I'm Ann Rostosky, today's worship associate and member of the Welcoming Congregation Committee and Board. June is Pride Month, and today is our annual Welcoming Congregation service. So whoever you are, whoever you love, whatever your sexual orientation or gender identity, wherever you are in your spiritual journey, come and walk with us this hour. Now, Lizzie Vina will share our opening words.
Good morning. I bring you opening words from Douglas John Traversa. In a world filled with the darkness of ignorance, let us bring the light of reason. In a world filled with the darkness of despair, may we share the light of hope. In a world filled with the darkness of hate, let us shine the light of love. And now Anne and Phil will light our chalice.
The chalice and the flame together form the symbol of our free faith. As Phil lights the chalice, I will be reading a quote by May Sarton. Help us to be ever hopeful gardeners of the Spirit, who know that without darkness, nothing comes to birth, and without light, nothing flowers. Please join me in lighting the peace lamp by responding with, and all the people of the world. May peace be with us and all the people of the world. Now, Lilia Weber will introduce today's speaker.
Good morning. My name is Lilia Weber, she, her, hers, and it is my great pleasure and honor to introduce our guest speaker today. Today's speaker is none other than our Pennsylvania Secretary of Health, Dr. Rachel Levine. Dr. Levine is currently the Secretary of Health for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania and Professor of Pediatrics and Psychiatry at the Penn State College of Medicine. She is a Fellow of the American Academy of Pediatrics, the Society of Adolescent Health and Medicine, and the Academy of Eating Disorders. She is also the President-elect of ASTHO, the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials, with her term beginning on September 26th of 2019. Dr. Levine joined the Wolf administration in January 2015 as the Physician General of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania and served from 2015 to 2017. She was named Acting Secretary of Health in July of 2017 and confirmed as Secretary of Health in March of 2018. Her previous posts included Vice Chair of Clinical Affairs for the Department of Pediatrics and Chief of the Division of Adolescent Medicine and Eating Disorders at the Penn State Hershey Medical Center. In addition to her recent post, Dr. Levine is also an accomplished regional and international speaker and author on the opioid crisis, medical marijuana, adolescent medicine, eating disorders, and LGBT medicine. Dr. Levine graduated from Harvard College and the Tulane University School of Medicine. She completed her training in pediatrics and adolescent medicine at the Mount Sinai Medical Center in New York City. Among these impressive accomplishments, Dr. Levine is also a parent and also happens to be transgender. For the past 4 months now, Dr. Levine has tirelessly been guiding the health policy and response to the COVID-19 epidemic for all Pennsylvanians. Her dedicated, calm, and consistent care for the citizens of Pennsylvania is evident on daily COVID-19 updates to the Commonwealth. I have the privilege to call Dr. Levine a friend, and I assure you, the woman you see behind the lectern guiding us is the same person I have known for many years, ready to help each and every Pennsylvanian. It is my profound pleasure to introduce you to the Secretary of Health, Dr. Rachel Levine.
Well, thank you, Lily. I appreciate that. And good morning, everybody. I fell off for a second and I was nervous, but now I'm back. through this amazing technology. So of course, I really have to begin with COVID-19 right now. So COVID-19 certainly is an enormous public health challenge internationally, for the United States and for Pennsylvania. I had often said over the last 3 years as Secretary of Health that public health preparedness had to be one of our priorities, because what I would wake up at 3 a.m. worried about is the risk of a global pandemic. And here we are. So it is certainly the challenge of my career, and really the challenge of a lifetime in terms of public health. We have not seen anything of this magnitude and size and scope for 102 years, it still poses a threat to everyone. That being said, we are making progress in Pennsylvania. I think that we are making progress nationally. The spring was very challenging in terms of the number of cases that we were seeing and the really exponential rise of COVID-19 in April. Through the governor's actions, we have been able, in terms of what is called mitigation, we have been able to bend that curve and to straighten the curve in terms of the rise of new cases. We're seeing 300-400 new cases a day as opposed to 2,000 cases a day throughout Pennsylvania. And so we're coming out of that mitigation phase, which was the stay-at-home orders. And, we have our red, yellow, and green schema. And now all of the state is either yellow or green. More and more counties are going green each week. And so I think that that's very, very positive. But we are entering really what is a new normal for Pennsylvania and the country, and in a lot of ways globally, where I think that we have to keep in mind and stay alert and stay vigilant about the risk of COVID-19. COVID-19 is not gone. And I'm glad that it's decreasing. It is actually significantly increasing in the Southern Hemisphere and in Africa, particularly in Latin America. Some of that might be temperature variations. Of course, in South America, it's getting to be winter. And so what that poses is a potential threat for the fall. And we're going to be ready. We're going to be ready in terms of everything we can marshal, in terms of testing, in terms of contact tracing, in terms of working with all of our communities and county municipal health departments, working with the CDC and Health and Human Services, and networking and collaborating to make sure that we are ready for the fall, and we are able to sort of, to the best of our ability, box in COVID-19 and detect cases, and through isolation and appropriate quarantine, try to box it in to prevent widespread community transmission of this quite contagious and potentially, and at times deadly, respiratory virus. So I know this is Pride Week, so Pride Month, so happy Pride. How that relates to this topic, I think, is in terms of my experiences. So, I've had a very interesting series of experiences throughout my career, but certainly, of course, in the last 10 or more years in which I transitioned, first at the Penn State Hershey Medical Center, and then as Physician General, and now Secretary of Health. I've been asked many times sort of how I'm dealing with the amount of media that I get, the amount of attention, media attention I get, some of the almost notoriety that I get. What I always answer is, first, I am staying laser focused on the public health of Pennsylvania. And, our mission is a healthy Pennsylvania for all. And I think that is by definition an inclusive vision, that we want everyone in Pennsylvania to be healthy. And I think that we have to focus on vulnerable populations. Vulnerable populations for COVID-19 include, of course, seniors, particularly seniors in long-term care living facilities. It's a very significant challenge. If I have questions, I'm glad to answer that about that. We're staying very focused on that. But all the other vulnerable communities, African-American communities, Hispanic communities, I think that we have to be very, very aware of increased risks in vulnerable communities, especially from a health equity lens, that concentrates on what we call the social determinants of health, those issues of health that we don't usually think of health, economic opportunity, is health. A living wage and an increase in the minimum wage is health. Nutrition is health. The environment is health. Transportation is health. Not only the economy, education is, and educational opportunities is health. All of those things actually involve health. To me, when I think of public health, I'm thinking of it with that broad lens in terms of, quote unquote, the social determinants of all of those different actions which influence health. And so we have to, especially in these times with the horrific death of George Floyd and the demonstrations, peaceful demonstrations, which are so important, that we have to take all that in consideration when I think of health. Racism is a public health crisis. Racism is a public health crisis. And so all of those health equity issues relate both to COVID-19, but also I think that we have to take that in consideration in terms of LGBTQ individuals. LGBTQ individuals have issues in terms of health equity. You can look at many different studies where LGBTQ individuals have less access to healthcare, have difficulty talking to their physician and being out with their physician, and experience bullying, harassment, etc. And so that's true for issues in terms of COVID-19 and issues that are not COVID-19. And so I think that we have to include LGBTQ individuals when we think of that health equity lens. One of the most vulnerable groups in the country are LGBTQ individuals and particularly transgender individuals of color. And I think that LGBTQ individuals have made a lot of progress in our country, a lot of challenges with our current federal administration, but we have made progress, but we haven't made true progress unless we've made progress for everyone. And that means progress for LGBTQ seniors, progress for LGBTQ young people, progress for young LGBTQ immigrants, and particularly the LGBTQ individuals of color, who are at risk not only of harassment and discrimination, but at risk of overt violence and murder, particularly among transgender individuals and transgender women of color. So that when we lift all of ourselves up, that is true progress in terms of health equity. And I think that is absolutely critical. In terms of my visibility, I am really staying completely laser focused right now on COVID-19, but I hope, and my goal is that as being an out and proud transgender woman, as the Secretary of Health, especially during these troubled times with press conferences almost every day, that it allows people to understand who I am and then understand LGBTQ people and particularly transgender individuals. And if they understand us, then maybe they will fear us less. And I often will quote that wise sage of our times, Yoda, that fear is the path to the dark side. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate, and hate leads to suffering. And so people fear what they don't understand. And so for many people, LGBTQ individuals, differences in sexual orientation, gender identity, gender non-binary, etc., are beyond their experience. And so they fear it, and especially during these very troubled times, then they react by anger, which can lead to hate. And so by understanding who I am, standing up there every day, just trying to focus on the public health, then they might fear less and thus eventually hate less. I think that is my goal. I think that that's true. I think it does happen. I hope it happens more. It doesn't happen to everyone. For everyone, and I do receive a fair amount of negative pushback. I've had to come off Facebook. It can't be sustained. And I get a lot of challenging, quotes in the press and a lot of emails and things like that. But I am absolutely able to compartmentalize that and then just focus on my mission, which is a healthy Pennsylvania for all, inclusive. So I think that we need in these difficult times to celebrate the victories that we've had and the progress that we've made, and to particularly celebrate Pride, whether the White House celebrates it or not. I think that it's really important to celebrate Pride. I think it's a month, and some often really extends throughout the state, where we can come together, where we can celebrate who we are, and look forward to a world where, you know, a world of diversity in all of its tapestry, that we can celebrate that, including in terms of sexual orientation, gender identity, and gender non-binary individuals, and gender, I like the term gender expansive, where we can celebrate gender fluid, gender expansive individuals, and just love each other with compassion for who we are, as we focus on extending rights to and fairness and health equity to everyone. So I think that would be the end of my prepared comments. But if people have questions, I have some time.
I guess we could take a couple if...
If you want, if you have to proceed, that's fine with me. I just wanted to...
If anybody... Hang on, Lorraine has a hand up. Let me unmute her. Go ahead, Lorraine.
Dr. Levin, my question is, what needs to be done in the educating of physicians to improve how we care for LGBTQ people?
Yeah, I think that's a really important point, which has been made actually by a number of different national organizations. I think that we need to start in medical school. I think that, and not, of course, just physicians. It would include nurses and physicians' assistants and nurse practitioners. And really, the medical care has many, many, many valuable and critically important healthcare professionals. I think it needs to start in school, so it doesn't seem like one more thing tacked on. And I think it needs to be built into the entire 4 years of medical education or the entire nursing education. I think that Penn State College of Medicine, where I still am a faculty member, has done a good job of that, but I think they could do more. I mean, for a number of years when I was there, you know, I mean, they would have a lecture on LGBTQ individuals, and I would give the 2-hour lecture to second year medical students, and that was pretty much it. But, you know, I'm really, really good as a lecturer, but I'm not that good. And I cannot, you know, educate all of the 150 medical students about LGBTQ issues even in 2 hours. And so I think it needs to be built into all aspects of their education, the preclinical years and the clinical years. I think that's true in nursing school and others, so that, again, it's just part of their training as healthcare professionals. It is not like, okay, we're going to train you about congestive heart failure, and then, oh yeah, there are those LGBTQ people, so don't forget those. So I think it needs to be built into the education. There are aspects of that. It needs to be improved.
Thank you. And let me say, I'll never have another opportunity. Your TV appearances have been very comforting to me.
It's very kind of you. Thank you very much.
All right. We have a couple more. Sure. Linda Weaver, ask you to unmute and go.
Okay. Dr. Levin, I wanted to take... Hi. I wanted to take a moment to tell you that early on, when COVID-19 appeared, obviously I had a lot of the same fears being in the risk group and risk age. And I shared those concerns with my dear friend, Jerry Oleksiak. And at that point, he assured me that with you in charge and Governor Wolf listening to you, we had the two smartest people in Pennsylvania handling this crisis. So I want to thank you very much. We also follow your briefings, and Preston and I have just taken so much comfort in your handling. And thank you for standing strong against the haters. I read some of the comments, and I think we have a long way to go in Pennsylvania. But I do think that maybe people's eyes will be opened a little bit more with the current events surrounding George Floyd. So thank you again for everything you've done.
Thank you so much. I very much appreciate it. It means a lot.
All right, we have one more. Go to Jerry Lazzaro.
Hi, Dr. Levin.
Hi.
I want to commend you on your accomplishments and on your character and on your courage. And one of the things that resonated so much with me was your statement about how if we're talking about health, we have to be talking about the social, the environmental, and the economic impacts on health. And this just seems to be getting pushed aside. I was amazed when I heard, you know, they're talking, well, gee, this is inequitably affecting Black communities. Of course, because of the social, the environmental, and the economic impacts on health. Mm-hmm. And what do you think can be done to more, I don't know what you're going to say, forcefully advance this perspective so that people, even some Republicans in Congress, can get it that if you continue to support policies which are not just enabling, but actually advancing inequality, that we will have health issues that probably will break the bank and really perhaps jeopardize our entire enterprise.
Mm-hmm. A significant challenge. I can tell you that in public health circles, so I am the president-elect of ESTO, so in July I'll become the president. That's the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials. So that's all the secretaries of health or commissioners of health for all the states and the territories. And we talk about this all the time, is that you can't just focus on, I mean, we need to work on many different things in terms of heart disease and cancer and all those things, but you have to take into consideration public health, and you have to take all those issues into consideration if we're looking at the health of populations. And so it's two different ways, and I've lived in both worlds, right? So I was a clinical practicing physician for my almost my entire career until 5.5 years ago, taking care of patients, you know, almost always more than half my time. And so, you know, we would focus on those conditions. I was adolescent medicine and eating disorders. So I would see young people with anorexia nervosa, bulimia nervosa, and I'd be focusing on those patients and those issues. But of course, now, hopefully, still helping people, but with a broader brush from a population perspective. And when you do that, you have to take all of those things in consideration. The CDC has been concentrating on that. And various offices of Health and Human Services has been concentrating on that. For the previous Assistant Secretary of Health under the previous administration, that was her primary focus. We do have a good Assistant Secretary of Health now, slightly different focus, but still also concentrating on those issues. Now, but it does get involved, as you mentioned, in politics. And if I knew how to reach the senators in Washington that don't listen, then I might be even in a different position because it's hard to reach those individuals who are concentrating on other things and have other priorities. So, you know, we're going to continue. The fight continues. As you mentioned, I think that the current unrest, demonstrations and protests will lead to a broadening of people's perspective. And we'll be able to make continued progress. You know, I am a hopeful, positive, and optimistic person, and I think that we will get there. It's not an easy struggle, though.
Thank you.
Dr. Levine, if you have time for one more, we have one more person with their hand up.
That'd be fine.
Manny McNeil.
Dr. Levine, I just wanted to say thank you. I have small children, so we watch the news conferences, and we have seen you on TV, and for my kids, they have never not seen trans people existing. So you talked about things for fear, you know, if you don't know them, you fear them. My kids don't not know that the non-binary exists. So thank you for being out there, and thank you for being a good example. And I'm just so proud of what you guys have done. That's it.
Thank you so much. I think that there's a tremendous amount of hope in young people. Now, of course, my children are older. They're in their 20s. But I think that in terms of all of these issues, there is just such a tremendous amount of hope in the next generation that many things that we struggle with, they will understand, and thus they won't fear. And if they don't fear it, they want LGBTQ issues, but other racial issues, things like that, then they won't get angry and they won't hate. So I think that there is absolutely hope for the future. And we just need to take it one step at a time. And what's right in front of me now is COVID-19.
Yes. Thank you.
So Dr. Levine, Thank you for sharing your thoughtful words with us. And we can only imagine how precious your time is these days. And we, I mean, you've heard a few thank yous, but we as Pennsylvanians are indebted to you and your continued service and guidance in leading Pennsylvania through the COVID-19 health crisis. As a transgender Pennsylvania, I'd also personally like to thank you for your proud demeanor in facing the haters and showing us when they go high, when they go low, we go high. So blessings to you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. And now we'll join in and sing Gather the Spirit, if you will.
Gather in peace. Gather in thanks. Gather in sympathy now and then. Gather in hope, compassion, and strength. Gather to celebrate once again. Gather the Spirit, harvest the power. Our separate fires will kindle one flame.
Here this morning, and unfortunately you can't see me because my office is about 8 feet wide and 12 feet long with a 5 foot desk. So bear with me, okay? As everybody can hear me okay, I'm going to open it and see what's inside. Aha, a little mystery box. And a plaque. This, as you may recognize, is a Matt Shepard Award. And this, if you can see it, is a little pendant that we give to the awardee. And on this pendant, it says compassion, acceptance, and understanding on one side, and erase hate on the other. The Matt Shepard Award is given to recognize an individual's efforts to encourage understanding, compassion, and acceptance by manifesting the welcoming congregation concept in their life. Gratefully presented by the Thomas Paine Universalist Fellowship Welcoming Congregation team. Briefly, I want to say we have always found an appropriate person to give this award to. Unusual this year was right after we gave the award last year, we got together and came up with the award for this year and who it should be. So this is a year long in coming, but very well deserved. So this year's award is presented to Lizzie Vina. Lizzie, we normally give flowers, and I'm sorry that this is the best I can do for you virtually. So thank you. Thank you for everything you do for this congregation and making it a better welcoming congregation. We're going to have comments by Lil right now.
So I was asked for this service to talk about the transgender experience, from our struggles to our successes. You have already heard a success story with our Secretary of Health, Dr. Rachel Levine, earlier in the service. And if you didn't know, I'm transgender as well. Many of you attending this service or listening to the recording know me. The thing is, I am but one transgender person and one set of experiences. So I can't really speak for all transgender experience, but I'll try to give you some things to think about. Because as a trans person that transitioned later in life, I've been a student of trans culture, trying to figure out where I fit in. And ultimately, this is a personal path, but I have learned some along the way. In many pre-Christianity cultures, trans people existed in peace and as recognized members of societies. These examples are many and include the Muxes of Oaxaca in Mexico, or the Kotoi of Thailand, or the Hijira in India, or many names of genders in indigenous nations of the present North America. The list goes on and on. And if you dig past the censored history, you can find it. As more modern Western society wrestled with the concept of transgender people who have always been here, we needed words to represent the experience. So I'd like to offer some terminology history here. So in the early 1900s, there was a gentleman named Magnus Hirschfeld. He was a German physician and a sexologist who worked with gay patients and others in 1910. Call him the Dr. Ruth of, you know, the early 1900s. And he developed a system in which he categorized 64 possible sexual intermediaries, ranging from masculine heterosexual male to feminine homosexual male, including those he described under the term he coined, transvestite. And that was to describe people who would be called transgender today. So in the early 1930s, think about the time frame here, that Dr. Hirschfeld toured the world, shared his research with the United States, Japan, China, India, and parts of Africa and the Middle East. Unfortunately, his home country was being overrun by the rise of Nazis, and Hirschfeld's institute that he had built up, called the Institut für Sexuelle Wissenschaft, or the Institute of Sexual Research, was destroyed. So Hirschfeld never returned to Berlin and died in exile in Nice, France, while trying to establish another institute in France. So you can see that those who help the transgender community also struggle with hatred and bigotry. So let me move on here. And so a little bit more current, there was a psychiatrist, John Olivan of Columbia University, coined the term transgender in his 1965 reference work called The Sexual Hygiene and Pathology. And its use was supported by Virginia Prince in her publication, Transvestia, in the 70s. And by the mid 70s, it was widely recognized as an umbrella term. So during your life experience or exposure in the United States, maybe you remember names like Christine Jorgensen, Billy Tipton, Dr. Renee Richards, Wendy Carlos, Chaz Bono, Laverne Cox, Caitlyn Jenner, Carmen Carrera, or Jazz Jennings. The list could go on. Do you remember their struggles or their accomplishments? I hope the latter. And there are more and more trans people and gender non-conforming people doing well for themselves. Some of that is from media support with groups like GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, or corporate employer support helped by groups like the Human Rights Campaign, HRC, or Out and Equal. I personally feel I've been blessed more than many trans folk. I have a loving spouse, family, friends, and a job and a home. And I do my best to live in gratitude. But the struggles of the transgender experience continue nationally and internationally. And Dr. Rachel Levine even shared some of that. We need non-discrimination bills nationally to be passed to protect the rights of transgender and gender non-conforming people to have access to employment, housing, public accommodations, and healthcare. I know I was breaking the law using a public restroom while traveling through North Carolina in 2018. I'm white and older. I can blend. Not all can. Mix being transgender with being part of another minority, and you have a deadly combination fueled by prejudice. Just see how many people we remember on the Transgender Day of Remembrance that are people of color in the past years and this year too. It's like having two knees on our necks. Consider Tony McDade, the 12th transgender person killed this year in 2020. This was just at the end of May. He was a Black man living in Tallahassee, Florida, and was allegedly killed by police. Two knees on our necks. Did you catch that number 12? Yes, 12 transgender and gender nonconforming people have already been reported killed in 2020. We are barely in our 6 month and 12 lives have been lost to prejudice. Most of those people were people of color. Now, while I speak for transgender and gender nonconforming folks about our experience, we wish to be recognized. When the history books are written about the Stonewall riots, we want it recorded that the rebellion wasn't just a gay rebellion, but there were trans people like Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia LaBarbera, shoulder to shoulder fighting for our rights. We want to be recognized in the census counting, as this administration removed questions or modified them. Maybe you noticed when you filled it out, the question on each person was what sex they are. And the only answers were binary, male or female. How does a non-binary person answer that question? We wish to be included. Back in the late 2000s, there was a bill attempting to be worked through Congress called ENDA, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. The Democratic Party had the majority in Congress, but there was a feeling that they didn't have the votes. So they pulled the transgender protections from the bill and it still failed. However, this divisiveness of throwing the T under the bus is a sad day in the history of LGBT unity. We wish to be affirmed. In response to the North Carolina General Assembly passing House Bill 2 on March 2016, this was in contrast to the city of Charlotte having a non-discrimination policy. In those remarks, the United States Attorney, United States Attorney General Loretta Lynch called a press conference on May 9th of 2016. In those remarks, she shared that the Justice Department determined that the North Carolina bill violated federal civil rights laws and North Carolina retaliated that finding by suing the federal government. She continued in her remarks saying the U.S. Department of Justice was responding with a federal civil rights suit. And she closed her remarks with these words that still echo in my heart. She said, "Let me also speak directly to the transgender community itself. Some of you have lived freely for decades. Others of you are still wondering how you can possibly live the lives you were born to live. But no matter how isolated or scared you feel today, the Department of Justice and the entire Obama administration wants you to know that we see you, we stand with you, and we will do everything we can to protect you going forward. Please know that history is on your side. This country was founded on the promise of equal rights for all. And we have always imagined, we have always managed to move closer to that promise, little by little, one day at a time. It may not be easy, but we'll get there together. We need leadership like this. We wish to be included as citizens of society, able to make contributions to our fellow humans. Will you recognize our contributions? Include us in key societal as key societal contributors and affirm us as fellow human travelers. Thank you."